welcome to another episode of the Streaking the Lawn podcast. Once again, my name is Pierce, and I've got the usual co-host crew with me. Caroline, how's it going?
Hey, it's good. I'm in Charlottesville now. Yay!
That's good. Charlottesville is lovely. And Paul, how are you?
I'm good. I am also in Charlottesville, but not as permanently.
Well, at least you're here now.
Yeah, I'm always there in spirit.
Oh, aren't we all? Well, we got plenty to talk about this week. The Hoos did not break our hearts on the gridiron this past weekend. They took care of business, as we all predicted they would, and beat their southern oldest rivals, the North Carolina Tar Heels, in a game that, it wasn't like a blowout necessarily, but it pretty much felt like UVA was going to win from the get-go, at least it did to me. What quick impressions did you guys take away, Caroline?
Yeah, I agree with you. Other than, honestly, when I watched the highlights right after the game, I was kind of like, wait, it was tied 7-7. Mm-hmm. So Virginia scored, great first drive, and then Carolina responded with a pretty solid opening drive of their own. And I was kind of like, no, this is not the Carolina I signed up for. I want the one that threw all the picks against Miami. But then from there on, absolutely 100% agree with you. Virginia was in control. They made good choices. The defense was fantastic again. And Bryce Perkins was outstanding. So I just really think it's not just that they're winning games. It's that they're comfortably winning games. And that's a nice feeling as a fan, as someone who like covers the team as well, where you're like, oh, well, this seems like they got it under control. They know what's going on.
Absolutely, Paul.
Yeah, that was very much my takeaway as well. They're like, it feels weird to win games that aren't weird. That mm-hmm. like that now the team, when a game gets dirtied up, when there's a ton of turnovers or when the only points scored are on special teams or whatever, it feels like that is no longer Virginia's only path to victory. And in fact, like that's what other teams have to do to beat Virginia, is to start dirtying up the game by, you know, weather, style of play, funky, weird things happening, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Leading wire to wire. It's not technically wire to wire because it was tied there after that North Carolina drive, but just feeling in control the entire time, even when it got tight toward the end of the first half, it was like, okay. Yeah, there wasn't this growing sense of doom.
It was sort of like watching the basketball game, or the basketball team, right? Like, you know, these games that they win, we feel relatively comfortable that they're going to win for most of it. The first half might only be a 4, 5, 6 point spread at the most for the basketball team. It's in the second half, you know, where that Virginia defense really starts to wear you down, and then it becomes a double digit lead for the basketball team. Everybody knows they're going to win, except on rare occasion. So it's sort of like that thing that we talk about week to week, the thing that good teams do is take a smaller numeric lead, but make it feel comfortable because they are in control for what seems to be the entire time. And I think both sides of the ball, you guys are right, looked about as good. If we were going to give it a grade, you'd have to say both sides at least an A minus, or A. That interception was a risky throw, but I like the throw. Of course, Reed was held on the play.
Yeah.
The safety was there, and I don't know that Reed was going to catch it without the holding, but it probably was going to be more like a collision and not an easy interception.
Right. Not just a center fielder running under a fly ball.
Right.
Yeah.
And at least it was more of an, I know it was first down, but it was more of an arm punt than like a pick six type situation.
Right. It wasn't like missing the middle linebacker in the middle of the field and just throwing it, into his chest.
Right.
Like starting the Miami game. But I'll also say Michael Carter only got 8 carries for UNC, which is just insanity. I know our defense is good, and I know they were doing a good job of forcing the issue and stopping the run. But like I said last week, that guy is – really good, and they just don't give him the ball.
Yeah, he averaged more than 5 yards a carry. I mean, that is if you were putting together the why should Larry Fedora be fired package, like I feel like North Carolina's rushing stats from this game are pretty much, you know, they're definitely going to be an exhibit in that package. Yeah. And Michael Carter only getting 8 carries in a game that was never, while it was still, while running the ball could have made a difference, you know, the game was never more than 3, 7, 10 points away from Carolina, that if you can establish the run with Carter or at least get a drive, like it's just, you can affect the outcome with a guy that's running like that, as opposed to, I mean, Elliott didn't have a bad game, but 22 of 38 for 271 is not as sort of off the charts impressive as 8 for 42, like Michael Carter had.
I think the big reason UNC stayed close was the good play by Elliott. He just put the ball where it needed to be put, like good quarterbacks do, which he hasn't done all season, and isn't really the fault or happenstance of anything. You know what I mean? Like, so he just played well, which, you know, give him a little credit. But UVA's defense hung in there to make the plays they needed to in the second half to stretch it out.
This defense has been so good. Yeah. Like, it's so fun to watch this team play defense. And as much as it's the, oh, I'm terrified when the other team has the ball, and I'm terrified when we have the ball. It's like a whole thing. The whole time I'm like, we're winning and in control, and yet I'm always terrified because it's just kind of how we've been trained. But I can't say enough. Why do people still throw towards Bryce Hall? I don't understand.
It is getting a little ridiculous, like the 0.0 quarterback rating when you're throwing it. That's absurd.
And I know, like, I mean, obviously they're going to, if they see coverage that they like or whatever else, but it's just kind of like, and some of the plays, his plays get increasingly ridiculous too. Yeah. There was one that he made where I was like, oh no, that's a reception. That's a big play. And then I was like, oh, here comes Bryce Hall out of nowhere.
And well, he's going to be on their best guy.
Yeah, you know, so in their recovery,
the ball to the best guy, yeah.
Chris Peace with the big strip sack, and him, it just always seems to be someone in the right place, which is a great feeling as well. And it's just every single, it's, blah, I don't even have like the right words for it. It's just they're holding teams to 18 points a game, and that's great. Like, you can't really ask them too much more. And the defense against running. Rushing, whatever you want, like running teams, rushing yards. They've allowed double digit rushing yards for 2 straight games now. And part of that is like, what are the coaches doing? What are they doing play calling wise? Virginia has gotten out in front in a bunch of these games, where you then understand that the other team has to throw it to try and make as much of the time as they can. But they've had, you know, under 100 yards in the last 2 weeks. Like, that's great. Like, you can't ask, especially when your corners and your safeties are playing as well as they are. Like, that's fantastic. Yes, please throw.
So one thing I've been thinking about this as I've watched, sort of looked at some of the advanced stats for Virginia over the last couple of weeks, of thinking how similar to the basketball program this year's football team is, that they're 125th in pace. And I don't want to say that they're not having an impressive defensive performance, but there is you're holding teams to double digit rushing yards in a game where they're not getting the ball as much. Like which works.
Absolutely.
If you are thin on defense, if you are thin on defensive line, absolutely. If you're thin on offensive line, slow the offense down, get in the huddle, make sure everybody's on the same page, so that you don't have to go more than 7 deep on the offensive line because you don't have it right now, and keep the defense well rested. So it's been the thing that has impressed me the most about this coaching staff since they came from BYU, was their willingness to adapt to what they have.
Yeah.
That they're not dogmatic about, we're going to throw the ball with a kid who's just a running quarterback, or we're going to run the ball with a kid, you know, who's a statue, or we're going to play every down, at least 3 down defensive linemen. Like, and we're not going to run the no huddle hurry up that they took such pride in being a staple of their offense in Provo, that they get here, they don't have the depth, they don't have the personnel. Okay, we're going to huddle, we're going to run the same, a lot of the same looks out of the offense, but we're going to do it in a much different way. It's been the thing that's the most impressive to me, and is why I have, even last year felt confident about the direction of the program, or the year before, even the 2-10 season, seeing that flexibility and then seeing it pay off the last year and a half has been good.
Yeah. What I like to, there were two drives. Sorry, Pierce, I just want to throw this in there while we're on the topic. I was looking at the time of possession for Virginia's drives. Their first one covered almost six minutes, 50 seconds, right? So ended in a touchdown and 83 yards. They had one that was 5 minutes, 23 seconds, also in the first half. That only went 37 yards. They took that much time off the clock. And then you look in the second half, like the one that they turned over on downs, and I didn't hate that play call. I didn't hate what they did there. I actually thought he got it and that they should have reviewed it, but that's fine. 354, they had one, 348, four and a half. Like, so they're taking, well, and they also had one that was a minute 19, but that was from the fumble. But they're taking their time, and you look on the other side, and the longest possession that Carolina had was 4:23, and that was their first one. They had two possessions that were under 50 seconds or under.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's great. 6 three and outs. Virginia had 1 three and out on Saturday.
That's huge.
That's awesome, you know?
And they avoided a letdown. Like, when is the, you know, they're not undefeated. Like, we've seen them not win games. But when's the other shoe going to drop for, like, things they're supposed to do and then they don't do? They're already obviously outperforming most expectations. So we don't want to maybe adjust those expectations and then blame them or get upset if they don't quite meet our new optimistic outlook. Like, everybody's saying they've got to beat the Hokies this year. They got to beat the Hokies. Yeah. Tech looks largely terrible. They have looked good. They have the ability to play well over there in Blacksburg. And we've seen it in a few of their games this year. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
theoretically, they can play well. I wasn't even impressed in the Florida State game, and I said that way, way ago, where I was like, they should have scored more points. Like, they left a shit ton of points with some great field advantage on the board, whatever. I get what you're saying.
I'm talking about their Duke win.
Yeah.
They went into Durham.
Anybody can beat Duke.
We also win
this. Anybody could be FSU, I think. And yeah, I mean, they looked like, the score wise in their FSU game was dominant, but they didn't look like they were capitalizing on what they could have with what FSU was giving them, which was anything they wanted to do. But my point being, like, they have the ability to play better than they have been. They're not like, I know they lost to ODU because they were underperforming, but they're not some pushover team that just because they haven't had the results that they normally do. And the fact that I've had way too many people say to me this, like, they've got to beat the Hokies. And, like, hell yeah, I want to beat the Hokies. And hell yeah, I want them to take advantage of a down season in Blacksburg that matches up with overperforming, you know, for our team. But the whole idea that we're adjusting what is going to be the expectations for this in year three with all the negatives on the roster that we continue to point out in terms of depth, not in terms of, you know, people playing poorly, but I just, like, it's still a road game against a good program in a rivalry game we haven't won
in
a decade and a half. So maybe I'm going a little too hard on this tangent, but I just think, like, it's going to be awesome if they do keep overperforming or outperforming expectations. But what's going to happen to all of us when they underperform? Or when they meet what we were expecting them to do, maybe a little bit closer. Hello, the Navy game last year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, oh, we made a bowl. We're better than we thought we were going to be. And then you got blown out by a service academy. You know, just blown out.
Hey.
Like, you know, one of the worst possible performances outside of the opening kickoff that anyone could imagine.
Well, the game ended after the opening kickoff, so I don't know.
Right. Anyway, I'm just saying, like, this is wonderful, but, you know, I think it's important that we keep noting the slim margin of error that the team has and keep being maybe surprised
Yeah, it's weird
to keep outperforming.
It's weird because I completely understand every single thing you just said, but I'm also having a hard time just internally figuring out like what to think of this team, because I think mm-hmm. each week that the slim margin is a little less slim. Like when they do stuff and I'm like, oh, they can actually respond and score points if they need to. Having a kicker is a solid plus, like,
yeah.
Or at least one that is, so I feel like while the margin of error is still slim, it's not as slim as I thought it was maybe 3 weeks ago. Sure. But also, I don't like the narrative that Virginia is only at the top of the Coastal because like everyone else is so terrible. Because that to me is diminishing what they're doing, because they have looked good. And there's a lot of people that will only mention Bryce Perkins when they talk about things. And he's fantastic. I love him. I'm so glad he's wearing orange and blue. But I just think like Alameda is still fantastic and Jordan Ellis is still dangerous. And obviously we were curious about how he was going to do after an apparent injury mm-hmm. 2 weeks ago. And so that was good. He got out there and had a solid game. I thought they probably didn't use him as much as they normally would have because of the injury. But then you got like our receivers are playing really well. And there's different things where I don't just think that it's a case of everyone else not being good. It's sure. Virginia might actually be good, and maybe we should give them a little credit. Not you, like, I mean, in general. No.
It feels a little bit to me like the Wake Forest, like the Riley Skinner Wake Forest years, where they came out of nowhere to win what everybody thought was the harder division, or to be ahead. I don't know if it was pre-divisions, then it was certainly higher up in the conference than they thought. That there is a yeah, this team's playing really well, and they deserve all of the credit in the world for how they're playing. But there is also it is happening in conjunction with a bunch of other teams underperforming. There's no way to say that Miami hasn't been anything other than a disappointment. There's no way to say that Virginia Tech hasn't been anything other than a disappointment. And Duke, which was the like, ooh, that's the dark horse team in the Coastal, started out hot against what's looked like maybe shakier competition and has really come back down to earth. Yeah. So that's not a like they're underperforming expectations. It's their underperforming possibility that it's not the scenario that anybody saw playing out. So yeah, this Virginia team has played well. They've beaten the teams they need to beat to be in this position.
Yeah.
But they're still a mid-40s S&P right. ranked team. That like that's a division, any division in any conference with a team in the mid-40s at the top of it, I'm going to look at it and go, damn, that's not a strong division. Yeah. Like it's kind of like what you would expect from like the MAC West or something. Like it's, I don't know.
I couldn't name the teams in the MAC divisions if you held a gun to my head. I could probably name a few teams in the MAC, but
I don't think I knew that they had divisions.
Yeah, one of the directional Michigans?
I just like saying
MAC. It's a good point that, regardless of people using it as an excuse for Virginia overachieving, the Coastal is garbage, and those are true. No, it isn't. And if any team should be kicking themselves for not taking advantage, it's Duke. Because Miami was expected to. Virginia Tech is sort of the like, yeah, but we're actually going to, because you know Miami's not really going to take advantage. And then both of those teams are having clear disappointing years. Duke has the established program in recent recruiting and a veteran quarterback that it's a little hard to swallow, I think, if you're a Duke fan for how they performed this year with this opportunity that instead so far UVA has taken advantage of.
Yeah, I think Duke had a lot of injuries too, but yeah absolutely. That's
but it's year what undercut, you know, a lot of injuries. Like you should have depth by that point in time.
Careful, Lauren's gonna just drop in and smack you and then run back out.
No, it's not gonna be Lauren, it's gonna be Ben Swain.
He listens to this. Anyway, let's hand out our stars.
Oh, yeah.
For the game. Paul, why don't you go with the easy one, and then Caroline, and then you don't have to.
I don't like going with the easy one. I'll go with Chris Peace as a stand-in for the linebacking core, as like the flag bearer for the linebacking core. Mm-hmm. The strip sack mm-hmm. there it is on Elliott, I thought was a real, felt like a momentum changer. That may have been because it was like pretty much directly in my line of sight, like directly in our seats. Like as soon as he got there, it was like, oh, the ball's out.
Get it. Your seats are good.
Anyone's seats should be good. Like, no one is going to the games.
Like, that should be the, that should be the tagline for Virginia football. It's like, Scott Stadium, good seats, still available.
Right.
Anyway, I, yeah, so I'll go
through. This is the JPJ. Like, all right.
Sorry.
Paul, is there more you wanted to
add? Crispies.
No, I'm good. I'm done on my Crispies.
All right, Caroline.
I've said my piece.
I'm going to go Bryce Perkins. My dude accounted for, let me see, make sure I can do the math, 329 overall yards, 4 touchdowns. And he was, I just thought, so important and so good that he made stuff happen. He made good choices outside of the interceptions. So I think you could really knock him for it all. 112 yards on the ground. It seemed much more designed runs and controlled as opposed to like panic runs. And I think he's gotten much better at that over the last few weeks. And the touchdown pass to Butts was great. There was a moment where you're like, oh, he's on, oh, he did it. And for a minute you're like, is that going to get picked off?
Arm punt 2.0.
Yeah. But he made stuff, and a lot of credit goes to the receivers as well. On this, I think the second touchdown when Dubois scored, he came back and got that ball. So that's kind of helping your QB out, making him look good. When he's scrambling and under pressure, you can come back and make those plays. Zacchaeus made a nice play for one of his receptions, record-breaking one. So I thought Perkins was outstanding.
Yep, absolutely. I'll give mine to Oz, though. Speaking of record-breaking, Zacchaeus taking over Billy McMullen's record for career pass receptions. I mean, just what a dude.
Yeah, and he's got so many more games to like build on that. It's like he's at 218 now and the record was 211.
I feel like there's still potential. There were a couple games for Zacchaeus before this year where he just took over the game. I think like against Miami, it was a loss, but like they couldn't do anything to stop Zacchaeus, things like that. And we haven't quite seen that this year, maybe because everybody else is playing pretty well and we have such a dynamic quarterback. Nothing against Ben Kurt, but a guy who is stretching, 30-yard runs for touchdowns or whatever is a little unusual at the quarterback position. But maybe it's because he doesn't have to, but I feel like we can see more. In a single game scenario here as like some sort of going out party.
Yeah, I feel like absolutely. I think that there's going to be a game where he just like goes off for like 150, 55 yards.
As trash as Virginia Tech's defensive backfield has been, like that could be.
Yeah.
You get Oz in space against teams that like a defensive backfield that doesn't know their scheme 10 games into the season. That could be a success.
Yeah.
10 games into the season.
Let's hope so. all right, well, let's talk about the Pitt game coming up Friday night. Prime time, thunderstorm.
This game's going to kick off at like 9:30. It's a 7:30 kickoff with thunderstorm for the next 3 hours.
I think, we'll see. I think the optimists would say the thunderstorms are going to be far enough east, and then the weather report was like, and then rain is going to materialize over central Virginia. It's not even like a that storm surge that's going across the country. It's like the pressure behind it. I'm getting into my weatherman wishful thinking here, but the pressure behind it mixing, like the high and the low that are going to mix as the storm leaves, the thunderstorms for east, is just going to create rain on top of Charlottesville, according to my pre-coffee reading of the weather report this morning. So we'll see. It might just rain a shit ton, which would be annoying and cold, but it lends itself to maybe a sloppy game, maybe one more dictated by the running games, which
I don't want that.
No, I mean, because that's Pitt's strength, for sure. but it's not like the Hoos haven't shown they can run the ball successfully. So hopefully that would work out.
Yeah, that's going to be the talk of – so both Pitt and Virginia are averaging about 28 points offensively per game. The biggest key difference is Virginia's defense actually does something. So I'm curious to see. I mean, the game last week that Pitt had, mm-hmm. like, I cannot – even just looking at the numbers, for those of you listening that didn't see that game or didn't see the score, they beat Duke 54-45 on like a last second – I don't even know if that's right, by the way. I think that math doesn't even add up because they were losing and that's a 9-point win. But anyway, they needed to score 50 points on Duke to win. And one, that shows they're capable of scoring 50 points, which is definitely something and that you can't overlook. But they also ran for a ridiculous amount in that game. And that's something that Virginia, like we just talked about, has been very good with in the past few weeks, is not letting teams do that, which, you know, I don't know. It's going to be one of those when Virginia basketball plays a fast-paced team and, you know, who dictates the tempo, like what's going to happen. They rushed for 484 yards against Duke.
Yeah.
Almost a first down per rush. Yeah. Which is like 9.3 yards, which is insane. So I think that our rush defense is better than that.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, but they also let Duke throw for almost 400 yards and rush for another 220. So.
Yeah. Who would have ever thought we would just say about a Pat Narduzzi team, man, their defense stinks.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're just legit bad.
Yeah.
And it's weird. Like, I will admit, I don't think I have watched a down of Pitt football this year, in part because I forget that they're in our division. That, like, I don't know.
I haven't watched Pitt, much.
Who knew? but looking at their stat profiles, it's the thing that strikes me is that it's almost a mirror image of Virginia in terms of preseason expectations versus where they are now, that – they started the year in the sort of mid 40s and are now hovering right around 80. We started in, you know, Virginia started in the 70s and is now right in the mid 40s. So I think these teams are fairly evenly matched talent wise. But just the perform, you look at that defense and go, what the hell's going on?
Yeah. They gave up 51 yards to Penn State, obviously a good team. They gave up 45 to a – I mean, I think UCF is a good team. They were a better team last year. So I don't think UCF is as good this year, but they lost 45-14 to UCF. They gave up 37 points to Syracuse in a one-possession game there. Their best game of the season was clearly against Notre Dame, where they lost 19-14 on the road. But Notre Dame looked awful in that game. And then they, you know, gave up 45 points to Duke. They lost to that UNC team, 38-35. I don't know what to make of Pitt. Like, I honestly don't. It's always a physical game. I said at the beginning of the year in our preview podcast that I never liked this game, that it's just like a slap fight, and it just always turns out to be just like, why is this happening? Something really annoying happens. I'm going to the game, so I'm extraordinarily concerned that that's going to happen.
The point I was making earlier about like games getting dirtied up is no longer how Virginia wins. Like, that feels like that's how Pitt wins, is something weird. What the hell kind of football score is 54-45? What kind of football score, you know, there's like 51-6. What the hell? Like, these are just weird games.
They're strange. 19-14.
Like, it's just, it's bizarre. That's this game. Scares me more than anything else on the roster other than the soul crushing sucker at the end there. But I don't know what's going to, the weather, night game, short, weird prep, like,
and the pressure
prep off by a day.
And it's a big game. This is one of the bigger game. I mean, we talked about Miami coming in ranked, but at this point of the year, this is probably the biggest game Virginia's hosted in the last 5 years in terms of importance in November. Like, when you look at it, it's like kind of depressing to say, but when was the last time there was a meaningful,
without the rivalry.
Yeah. If you discount the general, okay, we want to beat Tech because we want to beat Tech, but having a game of meaning where it like has a huge impact on this out and on the season, we haven't had one of those in a long time. Maybe, I don't know calendar wise where Georgia Tech was, but I think that was still October last year.
But I tend to trust Vegas on this, and I like the fact that it's a night game. I think our, who's playing with some swag for sure.
Yeah, that's fun.
And the students will be there because it's not a noon game. I think Pitt's resume doesn't do anything other than I think the only real eye tests I've had for them is watching plenty of them playing Notre Dame, and they looked okay, against Notre Dame, who is at least okay and potentially good, potentially playoff worthy. I know their coaching is good, and I know they usually destroy us, but also this UVA team looks legit. So I don't know.
The only thing I know for certain about this game is that, assuming there are no weather delays, it will be over in 3 hours or less. These are two teams like to slow the pace down, run the ball, which means the game's going to be over super fast. I feel like that's the only thing I'm confident in about this game, other than getting soaked.
Well, do you have predictions?
I don't know, 2011 to giraffe, something weird. I don't know. It's going to be a bizarre game.
Is Virginia going to win?
I said yes in the column. I think I said Virginia to win, but Pitt to cover. Uh-huh. Just because I feel like that's kind of how Pitt's played this year, is they've either gotten vaporized by Penn State or UCF, or it's been a one possession quirky weird thing at the end. So, let's say a 5 1/3 point Virginia win. I don't know.
All right. Yeah, I think they win, and it's going to be something 33-27 or something like that. Something weird. I hate picking the numbers. I think Virginia wins. I said the same thing. Virginia wins, but Pitt covers. I'm always way off with the numbers, but I don't know. I want to say that that Virginia will score a lot because, this defense, they could.
They got to take advantage of this, of the fact that Pitt has a whole full defense. I think that's the key, is not trading touchdowns for field goals, is converting on the possessions, because they're going to be able to drive the ball, and Pitt shouldn't be able to keep up with them. But
limit turnovers,
field goals instead of touchdowns, and you don't know, right?
Yeah, limit turnovers and keep their run game contained, and Virginia could win by 2 touchdowns or double digits. If Pitt gets a running game together, it's going to be a long night.
All right. Well, let's talk a little hoops before we close things up. Today was media day over at the arena, so I know, Darns, you got to chat with some of the players and hear Tony. We've got some news, of course. Have we really talked to him since Key got his waiver? I don't know.
Yeah,
we haven't really discussed it.
It came up tangentially when we were talking to Lauren that she riding high on her number one selection because now actively kicking people in the face to get them off the bandwagon.
And it becomes even more important with the announcement today that our Frankie Bedocchi is out indefinitely with undisclosed medical issues. So I'll be curious to see what kind of severity that means, or if it's just sort of a, hey, you take whatever time you need no matter what.
Coach wasn't super clear. And first and foremost, and I know that we all agree on this, is whatever needs to happen, for our thoughts go first to Frankie. And
yeah, of course.
It wasn't entirely clear if it was him or a family thing, but I'm guessing it's most likely something that he's dealing with. We hope that goes smoothly, and when he can return, that's awesome. It does. It would be a bigger hit basketball wise. Again, all of this is secondary to him being safe and better. But with Braxton coming in, the depth issue is a little bit less of an issue. So that was news today from Media Day. I also went to Operation Basketball, which I can speak to a little as a whole when it comes to, I think that you could not have asked for a group of guys to handle what they went through in March with that loss better than this group was equipped to do. And a lot of that is Tony Bennett. A lot of that are just the guys that he recruits. They're handling it extraordinarily maturely. And I've thought that since it happened. We've talked about before, like their response was about as good as you can ask following something like that. They've been extremely open about it among themselves. There's no hiding it. It's very much like, all right, this is our thing. We can't change it. There's no point in trying to like shy away from it or pretend it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So they're doing that thing that we said was the healthiest, which is leaning into it. and they're just ready is the biggest thing that they kept saying today and talking to all the players today and Coach Bennett. They're ready to, it didn't even come up today actually with Coach Bennett, but they're ready to play a game against someone that's not themselves, and fans will be very excited to hear. I got some info from DeAndre Hunter that they are adding some things, changing some things to the offense.
What?
Say what? I didn't ask too many further questions because, you know, we don't want to tell everyone what they're doing offensively. But he said it's different. It opens up a lot more things. He's a bigger piece of that. Which I think good. A lot of Virginia fans want to
say no more.
Yeah. He's like, I don't think I'm going to tell you the name of it. And I was like, that's fine. Like, it still uses some of the principles. Obviously they're not going to completely get away. Like Kyle Guy is one of the best off screen players in the country. So to like not use screens to get him open would be silly. But it sounds like it's one of the things that Virginia fans have asked about with Tony Bennett being a little bit more flexible offensively. So super excited about that. And they're going to be good. I don't know.
Say the one thing this sounds like I feel like that could have been an audio clip from preseason last year. Like there was preseason talk about a new, more open, more flexible offense, or at least a more up tempo offense. I think last year that there was this idea that they had more tools than they'd had under Bennett in a while. So they were going to get out and open things up a little bit more. And then it quickly felt like, you know, I don't have anything like a trained basketball eye. I can't break down schemes off of, you know, live game film, certainly not. But it felt for the entire season like it was the same, pretty much the same grinded out offense other than in a few spots. So that's awesome. I hope that it is something that is noticeably different, because I do think that is how Virginia gets to the next level, is a more free-flowing, creative offense that allows a little bit more spontaneity.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that'll be huge for that is, like, I mean, the times when you get the most, or you saw the most of DeAndre Hunter, there was an article on The Ringer today, and Paul, you and I discussed this a little bit, but they mentioned, like, is Jack too big to be – and DeAndre and Jack played together like 6% of the time. Like, this isn't like – when DeAndre's out there, he's generally with Mamadi or with Isaiah last year. So this year it's going to be Mamadi, or we'll see if it's Jay Huff. Like, maybe there is more with Jack. I do think that there was – when people say speed it up or like spread it out, if you're expecting – again, the like royal you, not you, Paul, but if you're expecting – more running up and down, like that's probably not going to happen. Like they're going to take advantage, and that's just how it's always been. Like Kyle Guy had a dunk, like Mamadi has dunks on the break. Like that stuff happens when it's smart and when it's available. Yeah. But if you think it's going to turn into more of a Carolina style or Duke style, like get it up as fast as we can, see what happens. But I think that it's going to be more where you saw Mamadi like juke the hell out of Marvin Bagley or Grayson Allen at the top of the key, or post up, you know, playing the zone. There's going to be more flexibility this year because, and I love Isaiah, I do, everyone knows this, he's great, Mamadi is more offensively minded than Isaiah was.
Right.
So if
right.
you had
that black hole lineup last year that Jack and Isaiah were on the floor at the same time.
Right.
They couldn't score unless they were hitting from outside. Yeah.
And my dream lineup, and I think we've talked about this, but like there's going to be a lot of times where we're going to have Ty at the one, Kyle at the two, Braxton at three, DeAndre at the four, and Mamadi at the five, and I'm just going to sit there with like heart eye emoji face and just be like, score lots of points. And I think it'll be successful. And I think that's exactly, talking to Mamadi today, he has put in so much work in the off season. And he's excited. Like he wants to do these things offensively. He's worked on better rebounding, but they all still took basic principles from Isaiah when it comes to keeping the ball alive and making plays that don't show up in the box score. And I think that's where this is going to have a happy, this is the best offensive team ceiling, I guess, or floor, both.
Well, I mean, if the new offense, like, no, I personally prefer the 60 minutes of hell, you know, fast pace up and down the court style of basketball. I've gotten used, like, I prefer Virginia, but my preference for Virginia winning outweighs my preference for a particular style of basketball. So I've embraced what Bennett is doing. If this new offense is essentially the beeline motion offense that that Michigan has used really well last year, and DeAndre Hunter is going to be a more athletic Mo Wagner, and they're going to have better shooters on the outside than Michigan had last year and play better defense than Michigan played last year. Like, absolutely a Final Four team. That watching Michigan's deep run, watching that motion offense going, holy crap. It has a lot of the blocker mover sort of principles, but it allows for a lot more creativity. And obviously the career that Mo Wagner had at Michigan shows you what you can do with a guy that's 6'8", 6'9", and can move the way that both Hunter and he can.
They looked, everyone, I mean, we know how great Mike Curtis is, but everybody looked so fit. You know what I mean? Like, and Braxton's he's a big kid too. That was the first time I talked to him. Like, he's a great interview. He's fitting in really well. There was a lot of, the team chemistry aspect I think will be huge because, again, like, this is a team that went through something that no other college team, I mean, there's 15 twos and those were big at the time. But this stuff, I mean, they got death threats and shit. You know what I mean? Like, and I think that they've come out of this not only, like, the best you could ask for, but better, if that even makes any sense. I don't know. I've just been really, really impressed.
Better than the best you could ask for?
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
They're winning two championships this
year. Yes.
the national title and the championship of the heart.
Hey, I mean, it works for me. It's funny because Ty is such a, like, there was a lot of talk about this summer of getting more vocal and leadership was praised. And Coach Bennett said he's sitting down and talking to Ty, like, okay, as a leader, like, different people react to different things. You know, like, some people don't mind being yelled at, that motivates them. But there are other people that maybe don't do as well getting yelled at. And so, like, he's doing that kind of – and he's not yelling like me and whatever. And so you have Kyle to kind of balance out. Yeah. You got Kyle and Jack to kind of balance out good cop, bad cop. And Jack said he'll sometimes take things and, like, tell the forwards what to do because they don't want to hear it from the guards, you know, which I loved. Like, hey, you don't know what we do down here in the post. but they just generally seem to get along, and I think that team chemistry will go far. I don't know what to make of anything anymore because, like, what do you do after a season?
What is truth?
what is life?
Well, speaking of, like, we were talking about the football team, I mean, last year they weren't preseason ranked. They outperformed expectations majorly by beating the crap out of the entire ACC.
Yeah.
And then the other shoe dropped when they had a truly terrible game against a team that was having a really good game.
That was their military bowl.
I mean, the parallels are sort of there, right? You know, like, and almost this is my nerves for the football team this season because they're, you know, last season the football team did better than we may have anticipated. This season they're greatly overachieving or outperforming expectations. that's what I'm saying, right? Like you, yeah. At one point you go, well, they really just are this good. And then all of a sudden there's the, oh, nope. like there it is.
Well, at least if they go to the ACC title game, we at least know what's happening there.
Oh, yeah, the football team. Yeah. They play Clemson.
I mean, I'll still go to Charlotte and watch them get stopped by Clemson. Yeah, Charlotte is lucky.
You have nothing to lose as UVA going to that game.
Yeah.
Sure. Except the game. Except your soul.
Well, you know what I mean. Right. No one
gas money.
No real result.
Lodging.
Is to surprise anyone there other than UVA, doing well.
When BC,
who knows?
When
who
BC knows? Beats Clemson in a couple weeks and then wins out.
No.
It could happen.
This is actually our last podcast before tip off.
I know.
For UVA season. This is a freaking Tuesday, man.
I know.
When the football team's doing well, basketball right. up on you.
Is this what other schools feel like? That football isn't something to endure until
the season starts? It's really weird.
It's, yeah.
And when I'm like, when's the game on? Get so excited.
The Tar Heels.
People listening, if anyone has missed any coverage, we've had a bunch of stuff going on for the last like 30 days, literally at this point. So we've got player profiles
like
on good stuff.
Like an advent calendar of basketball coverage.
Less chocolate. And,
yeah, way less chocolate. Especially since the ruffians in my neighborhood stole all of my candy.
Would you just leave a bowl out?
Yeah, I took Bennett to...
You sound surprised.
Look, I've lived in apartments for like the last however many years, right?
Let me learn you something.
No one ever takes a bowl
of candy out. They're going to take
one. Thing. You just say like, take one. No, it's not. The candy was gone.
It is the taking the bowl. That is the coup de grace of the story. Funny.
Like, oh, God. So I get back from taking my adorable Bennett dog dressed like a hot dog to trick-or-treating on the lawn. And I open the front door to be like, all right, let's see how many Reese's are left for your girl. And there were none and no bowl. So
would you have been more angry if you had come back and the bowl was there, but it was only Almond Joys in it?
Well, I didn't buy any of those trash candies, but I did put Butterfingers in there and they were all gone.
Gross.
They're probably like just in the bushes because no one wanted the Butterfingers or something.
Butterfingers are right.
I like Butterfingers.
Stuck in your teeth. They're good. Yeah.
I saw them in the store and Lily was like, Paul's so silly. I'm getting Butterfingers. So,
I mean, they're no Reese's.
Influence my choice. They're no Reese's.
And fine. Like, I will eat Almond Joys just to spite you.
I eat Almond Joys too, so I don't, you know.
He's spiting me. It's fine.
No, I know. There's some terrible food takes on this blog. But we won't get into that because we've been talking plenty already. Ketchup is not fine. Ketchup's fine
as an ingredient.
French fries.
I don't understand what you guys have against bread and meat are fine with ketchup. What? Like you put on a burger, it's the same idea. I don't understand why.
A ham sandwich should have ketchup on it?
No.
That's not
a grilled meat.
Okay, how about a taco?
Also not a grilled meat. Are you grilling tacos?
You didn't say grill. You said bread.
Amended it. Grilled a grilled
just,
meat.
Just moving the goalposts.
Do you grill awesome. Your chicken nuggets that you also dip into ketchup, Caroline? I don't think so.
I want to. I don't understand. It's like all that ketchup is supposed to go on are burgers, hot dogs, Chick Tens.
No.
And fries. Like, that's it. That's all.
Fries, sure.
Wait, quick time. Pierce, what should ketchup go on?
Yeah.
French fries.
That's it?
That's literally it?
Hamburgers. With other stuff. Like, that would be gross if it was just a hamburger with just ketchup on it.
But, yeah, I've definitely never eaten that.
That would be gross. But, like, a ketchup is a good part of the accoutrement to a hamburger. It doesn't belong on hot dogs, I'm sorry. And I think it's gross that someone would dip chicken nuggets in ketchup too. It's gross.
That's
definitely a weirder take that there is like ketchup only goes on. Wait, what about fancy ketchups? Like if you've got like curry ketchup or like.
Ew, why would you do that?
Yeah, no, go ahead and join Caroline's side of curry ketchup. Like, why would you do that? Of course you would.
Like duck fat fries with really good fancy ketchup.
Sure, absolutely. But and like ketchup is not good, but I'll eat it on fries or whatever, but there's always better condiments available. Like chicken, who doesn't put honey mustard
What goes on a hot dog? If not ketchup, then
mustard.
What kind of mustard?
Mustard is so gross.
Any mustard would be
honey mustard.
Yellow mustard is the nastiest stuff on the planet.
Thank you. Mustard is disgusting. It's second only to mayo when it comes to gross.
Okay, and mayo is delicious. So
mayo is fantastic. Like,
you're kind of an opinion
spoon before.
What? Maybe
Duke's mayonnaise?
Duke's mayonnaise is the only mayonnaise I buy, obviously, because I have taste.
Caroline, do you like Miracle Whip?
No.
Okay, all right. We can all agree that Miracle Whip is cancer trash.
This is all literally the grossest stuff. It makes me want to barf.
So delicious condiments make Caroline want to barf.
No.
I don't trust her opinions on dipping chicken nuggets into ketchup.
That's not that weird.
I mean, if you're in kindergarten, it's not that weird. But
things don't it doesn't matter the age when things are go together. Like
opinion on ketchup mayo mix as a
I just don't like mayo.
You don't think taste and culinary experiences are different?
No, they do, but it doesn't mean that things don't mix together. Like. Yes, they get more developed in some things, but it doesn't mean that they don't go together or they only go together if you're 8 and then as soon as you turn 9, they don't go together. It doesn't make any sense.
Yes, it does make sense because your palate absolutely changes. That's a known thing.
It doesn't, no. What about fish sticks? You dip fish sticks and I love fish sticks. Get out of it. Fish and chips.
Fish stick. Yeah. Fish and chips. Guess what I'm not dipping my fish and chips in? Ketchup.
Well, you're right.
But I would dip them in curry sauce because that's delicious. So anyway, that's a great tangent to finish things up with. I think you're wrong. I hope that
happy basketball offseason, everybody.
Yeah, no.
Thank God. This is almost over.
We won't have any time to argue about food anymore because we're going to have to keep talking about this successful football team while we talk about the basketball team. Maybe in the spring. Maybe this summer. I don't know. Anyway, stay tuned to the blog. We've got, obviously, your pick game coverage, but also the last parts of our preseason basketball. Maybe next week we'll dig in a little bit more into our expectations for the ACC basketball. So look forward to that. But until then, for everybody at the blog, I'm Pierce, and go Hoos.